So welcome to our meditation home. Is the volume okay? I'm curious too if the volume is okay in the outer area, in the walking room, and for the folks in the online world. Needs to be louder. They can turn the volume up in the walking room. Yes, thank you, Kristen. So I'll say a few more words so that they can tune the volume in the walking room. And how is it? Are they okay with the can people hear on Zoom? Great. Okay.
I wonder if there's a volume button out there.
There's
no, but out in the foyer as well.
They're not hearing out there.
Yeah, they have to look out there. I don't know where it is. Might be behind the door.
Behind the door.
Behind the door. You're
near the walking hall.
Okay, so let's try again with some volume testing here. Oh, great. Okay, we got it now. Get these technical details out of the way first. Okay, thank you. So welcome. I want to acknowledge that we have different groups here, different communities here. The online group, this is the first time we're gathering together with both the in-person and online retreatants. And so welcome to all of you in the virtual world, in your homes, wherever you are attending this retreat. We're glad that you can be with us. So I want to introduce, especially to those of you in on Zoom who are attending the retreat on Zoom, I would like to introduce, I'm Andrea Fella, in case you don't know me, and Gil Fronsdahl, and Kim Allen is our teacher trainee. She'll be supporting us, assisting us here at the retreat, and we'll be offering some of the evening reflections and talks, and she'll be teaching here in the hall quite a bit. So we wanted to make sure that those of you in the Zoom world are aware of her. Can they see Kim? Great. Just a few details in here in this room for those of you in the center here. If you find that the chairs, those of you who are sitting in chairs, if you find that there's another chair in this on the property that you find more suitable for your body, you're welcome to switch out the chair and bring the other chair in. That includes there's some black chairs like the ones in the dining hall in the fire closet that's next to the water fountain. You're welcome to bring those in and swap out a chair. We can't add more chairs in either the walking room meditation hall or this meditation hall because of the social distancing. But if you're in a chair and would like to swap it out, you're welcome to. That includes the turquoise chairs downstairs in the community room, if those are more comfortable for you, or the plastic chairs outside. You're welcome to bring the chair in that works for your body. And there are the hearing assistive devices in the foyer if you would like to use those to augment your hearing. And I think many of you are using those out in the foyer. So you're welcome to use those. Clip those to your chair or to your clothes so that they don't fall down on the floor. And then these are something that I think are unique to IRC. I've never seen them anywhere else, and I particularly like them. These are foam footrests that are really nice to put your feet on if you are sitting in a chair. They're they elevate your feet just a little bit. I find them to be a really nice thing to use. And if you do standing meditation sometimes, it also provides some cushioning for standing. So these are available so that we don't have to use a lot of the little square cushions for using under your feet. So these are available also. And then we'd like to just make sure that everybody's kind of settling in okay. Are there any questions you have about kind of getting settled here in the building? Everybody finding what they need to settle into their rooms? Everything okay? And if there's a question from anyone from the who's not physically in the meditation hall, you're welcome to stick your head in the door and ask a question. If there's anything you'd like to check in about with settling in. Okay. Yeah. There's an empty zabutan in here and an empty chair. Two empty zabutan. Well, that one has stuff on it, so I don't know about that one. Okay, so that's an empty, you think that? Okay, so we think there are two empty zabutans and an empty chair in the meditation hall. So if someone from the outside in the foyer or in the walking room, oh, that one says occasional use only. Okay, so there's not an empty chair, but there are empty zabutans. Okay. Somebody asked earlier about the theme for this retreat. And we often have some kind of a Dharma theme that we explore on IRC retreats. For this retreat, we decided to explore the teaching on the five aggregates. The five aggregates is a teaching that the Buddha particularly highlighted around how and why we cling, we suffer, we identify with experience. And this teaching on the five aggregates really kind of points to those processes. So the five aggregates, the term aggregate itself is translating the Pali word kanda, Sanskrit skanda, which literally means something like bundle or group or heap or collection, something like that. The word aggregate in English is kind of a funny word. It's not a word that we use much in our everyday language. But from what I understand, the Pali word would have been something that they would have used more regularly. Just an everyday word, group or heap. So it's not meant to seem technical. The word, I think actually, though, the word aggregate is an interesting kind of translation for this word, kanda. Because the word aggregate means, kind of like when you think about, when I think about what aggregate means in English, the word that, the thing that appears in my mind is aggregate rock. A rock made of other rocks. And this, the term is used to kind of refer to a heap of stuff. So stuff, a heap of something made of other somethings. So the word aggregate kind of expresses that in terms of the rock made of smaller bits of rock. But the word aggregate is also a verb. To aggregate, to collect, to gather. And that is also a way that these processes are understood. They are understood not simply as things in experience, but also how things are put together in experience. So these five aggregates, these five heaps of aspects of experience include form, you could say bodily experience, physicality, physical experience, form, feeling, simple aspect of experience, whether experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Perception, the recognition process, the part of the mind that recognizes experience. So we hear a sound, for instance. And there's a sound that comes in to our ears, and we will recognize the sound as a car or as a bird or as a motorcycle. This is a process of perception at work, and we recognize experience. So we might say we recognize perception through how we perceive experience. So form, feeling, perception. Mental formations is the fourth aggregate. Mental formations is a lot of different things. It includes what we could call our emotional experience. It includes what we would call perhaps mind states. We might have a sense of certain kinds of mind states that are not necessarily emotions, like we might think of sleepiness not necessarily as an emotion, but it is a quality that kind of can pervade the mind, affect the mind. So mind states includes, mental formations includes mind states, emotions. It also includes thoughts, beliefs, agendas, ideas. This is a big category of our experience. And then the fifth aggregate is consciousness. This knowing aspect of experience, this simple kind of quality of recognizing that our senses have been touched. So the eye sees a sight. There's a seeing consciousness. The ear hears a sound, and there's hearing consciousness. So it's said that there are six kinds of consciousness, one for each of our sense bases, the five physical senses, sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch, and then the sense base of the mind, So we might have an emotion or a thought, and then there could be the knowing of that thought or emotion. Whatever we experience is kind of a combination, not kind of, it's a combination of these five things happening together. We don't simply experience one or the other of these. And in fact, in one teaching, someone was asking about kind of trying to tease these aggregates apart. In particular, a question of consciousness, feeling, and perception. Can we tease them apart so that we can talk about one without referring to the other two? And Shariputra responded, you know, no, actually, in order to kind of identify or know the process of consciousness, you need perception and feeling to help you do that. To know, recognize the process of feeling, you need knowing and perception to kind of contact the process of perception. You need feeling and knowing. So that we can't really separate them out and just look at one of these. We need them. They all function together. They happen together in a moment of experience. So for instance, in hearing a sound, we have the sound wave coming through the air, something happened outside, a bird perhaps. The sound wave of that bird call comes through the air and impinges on our ear. There's physical, the sound wave is actually physical movement of the air impinging on our ear. So physically making contact with the ear. That contact creates this consciousness, this knowing. So we have the form, the eardrum plus the sound waves. We've got that form, and then it is contacted. And there's this consciousness, the knowing. With that also arises a feeling. Pleasant and unpleasant and neutral feeling, and a perception, a recognition of the sound, the kind of bird perhaps that called. That could happen as an image in the mind, or maybe as your mind saying the word crow, something like that. The process that we recognize experience. And then there's mental formations, all the ideas we have about crows. All of these things kind of happen together. We typically don't understand experience as a kind of combination of processes working together. We typically kind of just take for granted that we've experienced something and we attribute some kind of reality to that experience. And it's useful. I would say a lot of the time, our processes that do this job of creating our experience do a pretty good job of modeling what's happening in the world. And yet, all that we experience, everything that we experience, all of our sensations, all of our feelings or perceptions, all of our emotions and moods, everything that we are experiencing is created by these processes of mind. That's quite remarkable when you think about it, when you touch into that. When we hear the sound of a bird, we are hearing what our mind has created through these aggregates working together. When we see a sight, all that we experience is what these aggregates have created. So these aggregates can be understood in a good way to perhaps begin exploring in experience these five heaps, groups, collections, these five aspects of experience is through exploring kind of what the what of our experience. We can notice, for instance, in putting some food in our mouth, that there is sweetness, liquid. We can notice the contact of our teeth. We can notice hardness. This is all in the realm of form, noticing these aspects of experience. We might notice whether we experience it as pleasant or unpleasant. We might notice how we're perceiving the experience. Orange. We might notice ideas we have about what we're experiencing. Images or beliefs or thoughts. And this is a way we can begin to explore these processes at work. So the teachings describe these five aggregates not only as, for instance, in one place, it may say something like, what is the aggregate of feeling? It's the pleasant, it's the unpleasant, it's the neutral. But in another place, it makes the aggregates verbs, which is where I kind of liked the distinction or the use of aggregate, which can be either a verb or a noun. Because these five are also defined as five activities, five actions of mind, five processes. So in the definition, for instance, of feeling, this particular sutta says, somebody asks the Buddha, why is it called feeling? And the Buddha says, it feels. That's why it's called feeling. What does it feel? It feels pleasant. It feels unpleasant. It feels neutral. And so here it's not describing the aggregate so much as what it feels, but as the process by which feeling happens. So it describes all five of the aggregates in this way. Perception, perceives, that's why it's called perception. Knowing, knows, that's why it's called knowing. The one that's kind of really, when I first read this, it kind of it struck me really strongly, the description of mental formations. He was asked, why is it called mental formations? Because it forms experience. He said, what does it form? It forms, it constructs. Form, it constructs feeling, it constructs perception, it constructs mental formations, it constructs consciousness. This process of mental formation is understood to be the engine of how the aggregates are even arising, how they're even made. So our exploration, we start with a curiosity about what we are experiencing. And then we begin to be curious about these processes by which our experience is constructed. Mindfulness itself is a mental formation. It constructs experience also in a wholesome way. Mindfulness combined with wisdom, another mental formation, constructs experience in a wholesome way. First, we get to just see, when we are curious about experience, we get to see kind of the habitual constructions of our bodies and minds. And then we start to see that the constructions that we apply or connect with in meditation have an effect on our experience. So this is what we'll be exploring this week, these 2 weeks. An understanding of our experience through these processes. And then an understanding of how these processes, these very processes, we tend to identify with and cling to, which creates our experience of stress, of suffering. And that very process of identification, of clinging, is also just yet another mental formation. And we start to see how certain constructions lead to suffering. And certain constructions lead us away from suffering. More to come. So, Kim will introduce the refuges for us. So how is the volume? Okay, great. I'm getting some thumbs up. Okay, so as is traditional at the beginning of a retreat, we will remind ourselves of the three refuges that can serve as the support for our practice during this time. And I know that we're all experienced practitioners to be on this retreat, but I'll just offer some reminders, ways that we can touch into the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, the traditional three refuges that can support our practice. I find myself inspired by their sort of classical, there's a classical chant for each one of these that offers some qualities of them and praises each of them. I feel like I'll just draw maybe a phrase from each one. These refuges are, of course, individual, and so you're very welcome to think of them in the way that works for you. But in the case of the Buddha, he is said to be the knower of the world. And you know, maybe on this retreat with the theme, we will be knowing something about how our world is built. And there can be some inspiration, perhaps, in the fact that the Buddha saw completely how the world works, how his world was built. And we too can do that through our practice. So this knowledge, this wise understanding, this awake way of being is something that we can feel in our heart, perhaps as an inspiration. And then the case of the Dharma, the chant goes on to say, these teachings that are good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end. Actually, that word Kalyana could also be said to be beautiful. Teachings that are beautiful in the beginning, in the middle, and the end. The Dharma often refers to the teachings. It can also refer to the practice. So our practice that is good at the beginning of the retreat, in the middle of the retreat, the end. Anytime we can touch into the inspiration of these teachings that are guiding our practice. And Dharma in its deepest form means nature, how things work. So we can perhaps just feel the broad support of being part of the universe, part of this world. What we're knowing, what we're touching into is real. It's a support. And the Sangha, said to be the group of those who are practicing well. We're among many who are practicing well. We can often find literal inspiration from the yogis around us. Maybe we're feeling like we don't want to keep sitting, but the person next to us is sitting. So we can stay. And then a further description of the Sangha is that it is a field of merit, a field of goodness all around us. And This is important because this field is not confined really in physical space. So the field that we're all sitting in extends even to those out in the cyberspace, wherever you are. I hope we'll carry a sense that we're all practicing here together. And we can feel the support of all of those who are connected to this retreat everywhere. So the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, we use this initial evening together to begin to reorient our minds toward the retreat, toward these reliable supports, inspirations that can be with us for these weeks together. So, as is traditional, we will chant together the three refuges. And because this is an experienced practitioner retreat, we will actually chant them in unison, not as a call and response. And if you're a little worried that you might not remember the words, I think you'll pick them up fairly quickly again, but just as a brief review, we begin with three homages to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa, three times. And then each of the refuges is Buddham saranam gacchami, Dhammam saranam gacchami, Sangham saranam gacchami. And then the second time, dutiyampi, the third time, tatiyampi. So let's chant together. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham saranam gacchami, Dhammam saranam gacchami, Sangham saranam gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami, Dutiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami, Tatiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami.
So let's see, is that good, loud enough for me? Yeah? Okay. So as you know, the tradition is to evoke and commit ourselves to the five precepts in the course of the retreat, and that the theme is the five aggregates, we might consider that perhaps in different ways of understanding how the aggregates and the precepts come together, but we can understand that the breaking the precepts, which means causing harm for others, is probably a accentuation, a strengthening of attachment, of construction, of selection process of one of the aggregates over the others, and really kind of getting caught in the clinging to it. And perhaps, you know, the way I want to go through the list today is not, you know, just one option that maybe works. You can probably come up with other ways of connecting them. But I think that killing has a lot to do with one of the aspects of rupa, the first aggregate, which is to strike. That's just matter, activities to strike and to cause harm. Some idea that we're making contact in a way that's going to hurt someone. That the to take what is not given is probably caught up in the aggregate of perception or recognition. We recognize something has value or has some purpose for us. We want that for ourselves, and to recognize that value and that purpose in such a way that we select it enough, highlight enough that we want to harm someone by stealing it from them, maybe. To involve and be involved in sexual misconduct, it's probably easy to think about that sometimes it's the vedana, it's the feeling, the pleasure that sometimes that people get caught up in and attached to and maybe blinds them to the harm that they're doing. I think that's certainly the way that the time of the Buddha, they saw sexual activity in particular as being very much focused on pleasure. And we might say there's other things for us, but you know, it's not so far away. And then there's to lie is complicated, and that's the world of inner mental constructions and calculations and intentions and strategies and all kinds of things that are kind of spinning in the head. And it can be complicated to lie, especially if you have to keep it going and support it and you know, remember how you lied before so you don't contradict yourself. And this inner world, it's so complicated. And then the aggregate of consciousness of knowing that somehow gets confused with alcohol and drugs. Somehow it's some people are not selecting consciousness, but are deselecting it. They don't want to be known. They don't want to be conscious. They're trying to shut something off and some kind of awareness off. And so here we have an example of a selection process engagement with these constructions of the aggregates, where the construction leads to what's unskillful and harmful. What we'd like to do is to take these five areas of life, you know, five areas of this, you know, these ways in which we engage or experience, and move it in the opposite direction, not towards harm, but to benefit and support. And one of the ways to do that on retreat is to try to help contribute to a feeling of safety and mutual support and respect, even reverence for each other. And to live by the precepts is to offer that support, that safety, that respect, that reverence for each other. There are a lot of people in this world who do not feel safe. They don't live in places where there's safety around them. When you come into the Dharma, we're trying to make this a place where people who have felt unsafe for a long time can relax. They can kind of reduce some of their tension and their holding and their resistance, so they can meet themselves, they can heal themselves, this deep inner work. And so it's a phenomenal gift we give the community. It's an important way in which we come together. And we say it out loud as a community because we're speaking not only to what we can consciously know, But we're speaking to the subconscious, to the places that we've been conditioned in deep ways we don't even know, that something inside of us maybe needs to hear this. Maybe your conscious mind says, oh, that's, you know, I know this, and, you know, we don't need to do that. But who knows what resides in your heart that maybe would benefit from knowing this and hearing this and allow you to have nicer dreams at night, because you know you're in a community that's out loud has, you know, made this kind of commitment. And it's a commitment to not interfere with other people in their practice, in their life. And so, you know, so we don't want to cause harm. And so a couple of ways that becomes particularly poignant on the retreat that's very important to emphasize is that not to communicate directly to other retreatants unless you're working together and you're going to talk about the work. But otherwise, you don't know what kind of impact you're going to have if you bring up any other kind of communication, including notes. Retreatants should not be sending notes to each other, should not be communicating intentionally with their eyes. If you open the door for someone and your eyes happen to meet and you smile, that's not exactly, it wasn't like you were trying to do something complicated, like flirt or steer or glare or something. And so to create an environment where we feel safe from the kind of complications of communication that you don't even know what you'll communicate to people. There's been a lot of situations on a retreat where someone thought they were communicating kindness, support, compassion. And they probably were, but that's not how it was received. The people's background in their life was such that that kind of communication actually was very difficult for them to receive and frighten them. So this whole idea of speech and just keeping the silence. And then I think that this thing about the fifth precept, if I'm allowed to stretch it a little bit, certainly, it's very helpful not to, very important not to have alcohol and recreational drugs on retreat. And not for you, maybe not for your sake. You can make an argument for why maybe some drugs are okay. I hope you don't. But you don't know who's here at the retreat. And there are people who are deeply challenged by addictive behavior. It's a big struggle to kind of even be here and to know that this is a place where people are not drinking alcohol or taking drugs. It makes it safe for them to be here. It makes them safe for them to be with themselves. So it's a very high value we have here. And then to stretch that is people kind of, almost, some of you maybe, just kind of occasionally on Saturday morning or sometime, have something that looks a little bit like an addictive thing to technology. And I think that learning to break that pull, that habit around screens and all that, is such a healing and helpful thing to do. And so we asked, you've all agreed to be here and not to be using your technology. And one of the reasons you have electric clocks in every room is so you don't have to use your smartwatch. So I would encourage you, if you can, to put everything away. And if you really need to use your technology, that's one of the things you can talk to Andre and us about. And we'll compassionately engage you, explore what's going on with you, and try to find some appropriate way to go forward. But that's one of the ways we support the retreat is also by reducing, not using this technology while we're here. So we can do beautiful things, Kalyana. Good karma is also, it's literally beautiful karma, by taking our aggregates and committing them to non-harm. So I'll do call and response, because we don't have a standard way that we chant them or say them. So we can all kind of join in. So I'll do half a line at a time, and then you can repeat after me.
For the sake of our practice together,
for the sake of
our practice together.
I commit to not taking life.
I commit to not taking life.
For the sake of our practice together.
For the sake of our practice together.
I commit to not taking what is not given.
I commit to not taking what is not given.
For the sake of our practice together.
For the sake of our practice together.
I commit to avoiding sexual misconduct.
I commit to avoiding sexual misconduct.
For the sake of our practice together.
For the sake of our practice together.
I commit not to speak falsehoods.
I commit to not speak falsehoods.
For the sake of our practice together.
For the sake of our practice together.
I commit to not intoxicating mind with drugs and alcohol.
I commit to not intoxicating mind with drugs and alcohol.
So thank you very much for that. I appreciate it very deeply that that's the kind of commitment and the way we'll try to live together here for this retreat. And with that, the retreat has formally started. So now we go into silence. By design, we end this evening at around 8:30, so that it's a little bit early for some people, but to encourage all of you to go to bed and try to get a good night's sleep the first night. But if you have a lot of energy and don't feel like sleep is what's happening, you're welcome to come and stay in here. The meditation hall is open always, or the meditation halls, all the different ones we have here. We now have an infinite number of them here at IRC. The meditation halls are open. And though I will turn the lights down here and here, but not all the way off. I think the light on the Buddha will be on. And then those of you who are first time here, tomorrow morning when we do the Sangha service after end of the first morning sitting, the managers are circulating around. So if you need some support for what tools are for your job or need to ask a question about your work, you can look to the managers and they'll try to support you for that. And sleep well, sleep deeply, how to ring the bell. So if you're never been up here to be a practice leader, you can sit either here or sit where Andre is, because that chair will go someplace else now, I think. And so the bell is up here, you want to hit the bell softly. And don't worry about hitting it too softly, because you can kind of redo it then. But if you hit it too loud, its deed is done. And it's a bit jarring, it's a big clang. So if you've never been up here before to ring a bell, you might come over up to the end. If no one's meditating, come in here and like at a break or some point or other, and come up and just experiment with it. And it's just a very light kind of swinging of this striker. But it has to be loud enough as too. But not a clanging. So it's very easy to think you're doing it lightly and it'd be a clang. Just be a little bit careful. And there's a schedule up here. And I recommend that even if you've done this before and you know exactly what the schedule is, just make it a practice to look at the schedule tomorrow. And just make sure, because it's not on you, because the different sittings are different length of time. Some are 30, one of them is 40, 35, I think, and one is, some are 45, and some are 30. And so you have to make sure that you have the right time. So check the sheet when you start so you know the time. And there's clocks up here, and I think that's all you need to know, right? Thank you.